embodied sense of. And today we have Eileen Moeller, and she has been the director of the Frozen River Film Festival, and she has a degree in theater and history from Winona State University. She's also a master gardener, so let's tie all those together. So we look forward to hearing her talk about working in the arts in Winona.
Good morning. Sorry, I have to adjust this, Emily. I wore tall shoes. I should have known better. Good morning. Thank you all so much for inviting me to speak here today. I need my notes. I have to say, when I was first asked to do this, I thought, oh, you know, a presentation about Frozen River Film Festival. I do that all the time. That's easy. And then Emily sent me a list of some questions, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is very different than what I was anticipating, and it really gave me a lot to think about, especially as someone who has a career in the arts but doesn't really identify as a working artist. So you mentioned Sharon Mansour is going to be here next week. She's an artist I've worked with quite a bit and who I've really enjoyed working with. And she's someone many of us know in the community as a working artist. Her career is creating art, performing it. We're really blessed to have so many working artists in our community and people who can actually make that their career, painters, writers. There's really quite a diversity of talent in this very small community. And I feel very, very fortunate to be part of it. And at the same time, I always struggle with that a little bit as someone who works in the arts, but who has not made a career as an artist. My career is really focused on supporting artists and especially having the background that I do, which I'll discuss just a little bit. My emphasis has always been on creating the spaces for those artists to flourish, creating places where artists can not only share their work with the community, but also that they can get paid for it. Because anyone who, I don't know if there are any working artists here with us today, I think a couple of you might be, but it is work. And not only does it take a lot of time and effort and training and practice, just like any other type of job, but a lot of times some of the things that I do are, you know, I want to help those people, lift them up and give them those opportunities, and I'm really excited about them. And then sometimes I go home and think like, well, did I really make anything? Because I didn't paint a picture, I didn't perform in the play, I didn't make the movie. So what does that mean for who I am as a creative person? So thank you, Emily, for the questions, because it really gave me a lot to think about. So I did want to give a little bit of context. I do know quite a lot of you here, which is not surprising to me. But for those of you who don't know, I'm Eileen. I am 37, I think. And I've been living in Winona for a total of about 14 or 15 years. I came here from the Chicago suburbs as a college student. And I like to joke that I picked all the most useless areas of study that I could: theater, history, music, and gender studies. And so I'm sure my parents were just delighted. Fortunately for them, I was able to leverage that into jobs. They weren't always in the creative arena. I spent many years, as maybe some of you or some of your kids did, those of us who graduated college into the 2008 to 2010, there was a really fun recession. And so I, like a lot of people my age, did a lot of barista work. I worked in a warehouse, I worked on a farm. And all that time, you know, I was still engaging in creative things. I was joining organizations to help produce events. I was directing plays and just doing those things because I loved them. Unfortunately, once I moved back to Winona here with my husband, I had the opportunity. I was hired at the Winona Public Library. Libraries are my first love. And then eventually I was hired at the Great River Shakespeare Festival. So I have training in the arts. I have, at this point, about 15 years of experience producing events. And, you know, that all started at a very young age. And I think that doing a lot of that in sort of a grassroots way or doing it without it being my job has really set me up to have a non-traditional approach to how to make things happen. Some of you know that I ran for city council and served for a term. One of the major things I focused on during that time was supporting the arts in our community. And one of the major takeaways I had from my time serving on city council was that you don't need any sort of official body or the blessing of a larger institution in order to make things happen. I was asked after my council term, you know, what's the biggest thing that I learned? And I said that you don't need the city to do things you want to do. You need it for the sewers and keeping the streets clean, but if you want to have a block party, you know, if you want to do these things, you need to make them happen. And maybe you need a permit here and there, but don't wait for the city to do it for you. And so, you know, my time has really shown me that you know, there is jobs, there are value in artistic practice, and that it should be something that everyone should be able to do. And that even if you don't feel like you are an artist, let's say you're not a painter, you can't draw to save your life, maybe you're still on stick figures, or you can't play piano as beautifully as Pippa, that was gorgeous. You know, it's very difficult when you feel drawn to creativity and to art, and you may or may not have the skill for it. However, I think that's one of the major things that being a creative worker and not an artist has led me to understand that there can be a more expansive view of artistry and creative practice. So, with that in mind, one of the major things I wanted to discuss is working in the arts versus personal creative practice. So I have a job, as many of you know, at Frozen River Film Festival, and some of you may know that I'm actually going to leave the film festival and go back to the Shakespeare Festival. So I'll be moving about 5 feet in our office, because we all share an office, and it will be totally uncomplicated and perfectly fine, I'm sure. You know, those are the things I do for money. You know, many of us have jobs that we love or we feel about, or maybe even we don't like. But ultimately, my job is what I do so that I can pay my mortgage and so that I can get health insurance and, you know, all of those like super fun things that make us feel so creative. But, you know, what I do professionally is something that a lot of people see and think, oh, that's fun. But it's also often a lot of the same people who say, oh, I would never want to do your job. So there's more to it, which I won't bore you with right now. But so much of working in the arts is really boring or really tiring and frustrating. And you're coming up against a lot of the same systems we have in any institution. You're still working within the structure of a nonprofit. You still have bills to pay. You have a family to support. And just because the product is what other folks think of as fun doesn't necessarily mean the work always is. However, it is a privilege to work in that industry. A lot of what I do is work with very little to make as much out of it as I possibly can. I work very intensely with community members, many of you here. I have worked with in one capacity or another, whether it's doing things at Winona State or at various places throughout the community, the Winona Arts Center. And those are all things that I do mostly because I am paid to do them. And I have a degree of skill in them. However, my personal creative practice is completely different from that. And it's taken me a really long time to sort of separate those two things and understand that I can have a job in the arts that is exciting and cool and can also be frustrating and boring and all of those things. And I can have a creative practice that isn't necessarily what a lot of people would consider art. Particularly gardening, which is how I met Kay, and knitting are my major creative practices. And those are the things that I would do whether I was paid to do them or not. And I think especially growing up in a world where a lot of the things that I really enjoy, particularly making things, fiber crafting, digging holes. I love to dig a hole. I love, you know, like give me a shovel and some dirt and you could just leave me alone for a few hours. There don't even have to be any plants involved. I just, you know, it's one of the only things where I don't think. And I find that really fulfilling. And I imagine that for any of you who paint or play music or anything like that, you get into that flow. And I think they're probably very similar. The other major thing that I invest time in and I have come to understand is a form of creative practice are my friendships. And I know that's something something I understand is very important to a group like this, that really the job I do, all of those things, the longer I go in my life, I understand that those should really all be in service of fostering relationships with the people that I love, who, you know, I have a spouse and I have a family I'm related to, but it's really my friendships that I think very critically about and think about ways in which I can engage with those people and we can uplift each other. I have many close friends that also work in the arts or in sort of what we would call the creative industry, creative economy, and we share a lot of the same struggles, and those have really helped me through any sort of questioning I have had about whether or not, is this the right thing to be doing? Am I wasting my time? You know, all of those questions you have when you've been in a job for a long time. And they've, you know, either encouraged me sometimes, like, you know, don't worry about that, don't bother with that, or, hey, you should be really proud of that, you should invest more time in that, because, you know, I think any of us who have been married for a significant amount of time know that our spouse is wonderful and can be very helpful, but they don't know everything and they can't be everything to us. And I think that I have really been fortunate to have quite a few friendships and especially people whose experiences are so different from mine. To help provide context and texture to my life and have also influenced my creative practice. For example, when I moved back to Winona, I met someone who works as an artist. Her name is Molly. She's a tattoo artist. She's done this whole side of my body. And she and I worked together to design all of these things, and her job is what we would consider, she's a professional artist. And, you know, for all intents and purposes, a lot of us would say, wow, don't you just love it every day? But you don't think about the customer service, the carpal tunnel from dealing with that machinery all day, running your own business, having to be the janitor and the bookkeeper and the all of these things and dealing with the health department. And so having a close relationship with someone like that has really filled out what I understand it takes to have a career like that. And also, she's the person who I discovered my love of gardening with. I had a great influence with my mom and my grandma, but having a friend like that who we had this shared passion that grew and blossomed, and it continues to be one of the focal points. And that's not something my spouse is interested in. You know, God love him, but he's an indoor cat. So if I wanna do something, dig a big hole, do some construction, it's me and my mom and my friend who are doing it. And so that has really made me think differently about things like how I assume a male partner should be, because I have a lot of, you know, I know people who it's like, oh, the husband does all this stuff, and I'm like, well, I didn't get one like that. And that's where, you know, it's really been such a blessing to have the influence of those other people in the community and to see their different ways of living, their different ways of being. One of the questions that was put to me was about spiritual practices. And this was a question I really have been thinking about a lot. I was raised in United Church of Christ, which is not too far a step away from Unitarian, had a really interesting combination of being raised in that church, which is very open and affirming and progressive, and it was one of the first places where I heard about, you know, all sorts of people that were different than me, and it was through the context of my pastor saying, you know, we love everyone and, you know, all of these sorts of things. And then I went to a Catholic high school, and what an experience. They did not like me, I'll tell you that. But then, you know, as I got older, it's, you know, when I go home, I go to the UCC church with my mom. But really, the place where I feel closest to any sort of spirituality is through these creative practices, and I think that there can be a lot of time and space and ability to sort of let your mind clear and have those moments where you're not perseverating on your day-to-day stresses and can find some clarity. I will go back to my metaphor of digging a hole. Same thing with weeding. When I know a lot of gardeners do not like weeding, but if I know that there is a patch and I just have to get down on my hands and knees and tackle it, I know there are many physical meditative practices that people can engage in, and that's mine. It is one of the only places where my mind completely clears. I'm a very anxious person, a very controlling person. That's how I get the jobs that I get, because I have set a very high standard for myself professionally, but this is one of the only places in my life where I can do what I feel is appropriate in that time, and then at a certain point, I can just be like, well, that's enough of that. But I will always feel better afterwards. And I think that discovering that that is something that connects me with myself, that connects me with nature, with the world around me, has really allowed me to find some peace in a very stressful world. So I hope that you find a practice like that. So this is also one of the things I have struggled with as considering my individual creativity. So this is part of my yard, and I can't put it in a gallery, but I have probably spent, well, we've lived in our house for almost 8 years now, and this was all grass when we moved in, and that was a garage, so I did bang some holes in it this year. It's something that I think a lot of people who engage in handicrafts, gardening in particular, any sort of thing where it's not transportable. I can't go perform this somewhere. I can't hang it at the Blue Heron or at the Art Center. And so, you know, how do you then find that validation? Is this art? Is this creativity? I don't know. I think different people would say different things. But coming to an understanding for myself that this is the way I express myself has really opened my eyes to the way that other people might express themselves. I think fashion's a great example. We see sort of like high fashion that you might see on TV shows or in magazines, things like that. But the way people express themselves through clothing, through the way they decorate their house, all of those things, we may or may not have sort of like the blessing of like art school or winning an award or something like that, but they are still creative expressions of who you are as a person and what you find beautiful and what you find interesting. And I think accepting that about yourself, if you are someone who struggles with that, can really be a great way to connect with yourself and connect with the world around you, and a way that you can, you know, validate for yourself that you are a creative person. Because I really do believe every person is creative, whether or not they are an artist. That's the end of the formal presentation. Hopefully that was useful. Do you want me to sit down?
We'll do Q&A.
Oh, okay.
We'll do Q&A. You may have a question.
I'm wondering, as director of the Frozen River Film Festival, if there's, if you could speak to just film as a way of connecting us spiritually, if there's some experiences you've had of how film has expanded your empathy or compassion, or what place you see film having in kind of arts and spirituality.
Yeah, thank you. That's a great question. I think, you know, I'll be honest, when I was hired at Frozen River Film Festival, it was in fall of 2020, so we didn't even know if the organization was going to be able to continue. And I was coming from the Shakespeare Festival. I have a theater background. I'm a connoisseur of films, but I never really had been a massive documentary fan. So it was really new to me, and I really appreciated the opportunity to sort of dive into that world, and especially to understand the scope of particularly documentary films. That's what we get submitted to us, but filmmaking in general, there's so much more beyond, you know, what gets released in the theaters or even what's available on streaming. And a lot of what Frozen River presents are those things that you'll miss if you don't know where to find them. And the opportunity to curate that for the community is really exciting, because we really have a lot of conversations about what does this community specifically find interesting? Not, you know, what's going to have mass appeal, what's going to bring in, you know, bigwigs from this place or that place. It's really about what stories do we want to connect Winonans with, because the majority of our audience are Winonans. And especially with documentaries, what's so interesting about them is there is a lot of creative leeway. I think, I know a lot of you go to Frozen River, but a lot of, like, when I thought about documentaries, I was like, you know, PBS, David Attenborough, kind of dry, just the facts, ma'am, kind of thing. But there's so much creativity within that sort of nonfiction category. And we have films that get submitted that are 3 minutes in length, up to 90 minutes, 2 hours, feature-length films, budgets from $0 up to multiple millions. And the stories that they're telling are also different. And being able to connect audiences here with those stories, I think there's a lot of people in the community who seek out, you know, information, ideas, opinions that are different from their own. We also live in a community that is pretty polarized, like a lot of communities right now, but there's something about watching a film where the character on the screen is talking about a specific issue and how they're affected by it, and then we as audience members taking that in, that feels a little bit less aggressive than if you were to, you know, go to a comment session at City Hall, or if you were to get in, you know, get into a heated discussion with your neighbor. It gives you sort of the opportunity to sit and take it in and take what you can or what you need from it. And it's someone else who's delivering the message versus us trying to convince one another that we're right. Because this is a person who's talking about their real life experience and a real thing that happened to them or a real thing that's happening in the world. And so you as the audience member, I as the audience member, can't really say, well, no, that's not happening. Perhaps the lens through which it is being told to us might be skewed one way or another. But, you know, the people that are on screen are really struggling with those things and really feeling those things. And having to see that and think about that, I think, really changes how we view the world. And it's a way for all of these incredible stories from all over the world to come to this community, and where we can sit in a place where we feel comfortable and welcome and be ready to take in something that might challenge us. And I think there's something about just the medium that feels a little bit more digestible than if you were to go to an in-person talk on a specific topic. But there's just so many different ways of expressing how people are approaching these topics. We're seeing more and more films where we'll have the discussion internally, like, is that really a documentary? I don't know. Like, it had cartoons, or, you know, it had animation, or it had this or that. And it's really expanding a little bit. And so that's really given us a lot of fodder for having discussions. And, you know, sometimes there's not a yes or no answer. And so we really encourage the audience to sort of figure that out for themselves. And I don't know if that totally answers your question about spirituality, but I do think that there is an element of bearing witness to the struggles of people who are very different from ourselves, and taking time to think on that, that can really sort of expand our worldview. Oh, yes, there's so many. I mean, it's always kind of funny to me because people are like, oh, did you see all of them? And I'm like, do you know how long I would have to sit still to watch all of those? I can't sit for that long, but I do watch a lot of them. And that's why we have a screening committee. But I think that film, Space, Hope, and Charity, was really incredible. We have a few, one in particular that we will be showing at the upcoming festival called Champions of the Golden Valley. It was started filming in 2019, and the filmmaker originally, it's in this remote village in Afghanistan, and the filmmaker originally just wanted to discuss how there was this really unique skiing competition, downhill skiing competition in this, I believe the village is called Bamyan, and there were these two different ethnic groups that came together for a ski competition in the winter, and that's how the story started. But then when the Taliban took back over, then it became a story about, like, well, how do we still connect with these people? What happens to a small but significant, you know, community event like this under this regime? And then there's even an element of, because one of the communities encouraged girls to ski, and so then it was a question of getting out the coach, the guy that coached the girls, and all of those sorts of things. And it's just, it's so beautifully done. It's about the joy of healthy competition, but also then has this aspect of being a refugee, leaving your homeland, and it's really incredible. So I encourage you all to come see it. Obviously, that was devastating for so many reasons, but unlike a lot of industries, especially live events have still not recovered, and specifically sort of what we would consider more formal type events, such as going to a live theatrical production or going to see a movie where you're sitting and being quiet for a certain amount of time. And I believe, you know, church attendance as well is still recovering from that event. However, I wouldn't say that was like my most difficult personal one, because that's something we were all going through together, and many of us in the creative industry still are going through that. We still do not have attendance numbers that we had before the pandemic. Both of the organizations I work with, the Shakespeare Festival and the Film Festival, the audiences are still much smaller than they were prior to the pandemic. And I think that's something really only time can deal with. I will say personally, one of the biggest struggles I have faced is trying to translate what the value of what I do and what other arts administrators do to not only sort of the audience and the community, but even to colleagues. So for example, when I worked for the Shakespeare Festival, and when I will work for them in about a month or so, the In theater especially, there's a major divide between artistic staff and production and admin. So there's a real class divide. And I don't think it will come as a surprise to anyone that the people that you see that are performing are the ones that get valued the most. They're the ones everyone's excited to see, the actors, the musicians, the whomever. And then everyone else is like, oh, it's just her. Dealing with that as far as the community and the public is something I have long accepted, especially being female in that industry. And when I was a little bit younger, I have a young face that I'm hoping holds on for several years. But when I was even younger, the amount of times that I was like grabbed or touched by people that I was not, you know, that were just like, hey, do this for me, or, you know, that kind of thing, are struggles I think that a lot of young women face. But particularly, it was very jarring to me to see the difference between how my male bosses and the professional performers were treated versus myself, my box office staff. And that's not something that I can really fix. It's really, we have a culture of sort of treating people we see as service people as very expendable, and not really having any stake in the product that's being created. And so I work on that a lot internally with my colleagues. We were discussing the budget the other day, and it was like, well, we can make a cut here. And I said, I just want to remind everyone that, you know, if we're cutting, it's got to be all the departments. It's got to be everyone who tightens their belt. It can't just be, we're going to make all of the shop workers work more and not the actors, because the actors are protected by a union and the shop workers aren't. And so, we have a lot of those discussions about equity, because I really believe that we can't even begin to talk about racial or gender equity if we're not even treating people with different jobs with similar value. So I would say that's something that's my ongoing battle as far as being an arts administrator, that, you know, without me selling the tickets or raising the money, you know, you're just a grown-up playing pretend in an empty room. Great question. I should gesture this way, that is really unique, because so many of our other arts organizations, even if they're now sort of independent professional organizations, such as Frozen River or the Shakespeare Festival, started very scrappy, very grassroots, very a bunch of dedicated volunteers that wanted to see this thing exist, and then, you know, built on it from there and to the point where it was an official nonprofit and you have paid staff, and that's been the evolution. It's so different from some of these organizations that have a major funder where it's sort of the passion project of a very wealthy person, because the expectations and the way it exists in the community is so different. So as far as that, you know, that building and organization goes, I really don't know. I know it's going to be a very large theater, and based on what I've seen in Winona, of Winona audiences, you know, any performance, you know, we maybe fill up 200, 250 people at a time. Maybe if it's a single major event, maybe you'd have 500, 800. But I know from programming events in larger spaces that it's very, very rare to have a very large space completely filled, especially with locals. And I believe the philosophy is that a lot of out-of-town folks will be attracted to that. And I don't have any sort of statistical information on any precedent that's been set for something like that. I do know that I'm very excited for both organizations I work with to move into the Masonic, because that space will fit about 200 people. And I think it's going to be really wonderful to get that space activated and really make it a hub for many types of arts events and culture events in the community. So, but I really believe in a mindset of abundance as far as the arts are concerned. I think the more things we have, the more things people go to. I don't, a lot of us really try hard not to program against each other. Like, if one organization has a major event, we have a network where we'll say, hey, does anyone else have anything going on? And really try not to program things opposite. But the wonderful thing is, you know, we're a town of about 26,000 people, give or take, and there's always something to do, and when there's multiple events, there's lots of different people at those events, or people, you know, that will hit up a bunch of events in one night, which is very ambitious. Is this like a anyone in the world? Oh, dang, who would I want to see? I would love to see David Byrne. I was just talking with someone about Talking Heads this morning. They're my favorite band of all time. David Byrne's really weird. If I ever had the opportunity to see him perform or speak in person, I would lose my mind. So I would love that. Thank you so much for having me.